You're listening to SBS News.
Two of Sarah Sutton's brothers, Ben and Peter, were diagnosed with schizophrenia at an early age. The condition can cause a number of symptoms, including intense but usually short-lived episodes of psychosis, as well as non-psychotic symptoms, which tend to last much longer, affecting mood, motivation and emotional expression. Miss Sutton's brothers are in the process of getting NDIS support plans, a move that Miss Sutton says will be life-changing for the family.
My parents are in their 70s and getting old, and they have their own physical health issues because of the stress involved in providing that daily support to my brothers. So things are, I guess, getting a lot harder for them because basically my brothers don't receive adequate supports in the community to live good lives. So, you know, that often just falls back on the families.
Getting support from the NDIS is one thing, but finding long-term accommodation is another challenge altogether. The NDIS was designed as a support service and only assists people with very high needs, or about 6% of recipients, with accommodation provision. And given the long waits for other social housing options, Miss Sutton's parents took matters into their own hands. They used their superannuation to buy the house next door and set it up as a family trust for the brothers to live in. Miss Sutton says despite the financial stress of purchasing a house, having family living close by has made it easier to help care for her brothers.
So we all live very close by to each other, within a kilometre of each other, and that's so we can provide that daily support to them. So we've chosen to live close together, which sometimes has drawbacks, and sometimes things can get very stressful, and it would be nice to have a little break. But other times it works out really well that my brothers can just pop in when they want to do that.
Joseph Connellan is the Senior Manager of Housing at the Melbourne Disability Institute at the University of Melbourne. The Melbourne Disability Institute and the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence are co-funding a project detailing the different housing options available for people with a disability, their carers and the services that support them. Those options include social housing, the private rental market, unsupported accommodation, family-funded projects, group homes and living with ageing parents. Mr. Connellan says between 50 and 70,000 people accessing the NDIS are in need of accommodation but are ineligible for the specialist disability accommodation it assists with. Mr. Connellan says the NDIS has brought advances in disability support, but the provision of housing must now be prioritised.
What we now have is the support component come through, but we haven't had the housing component come through. It's important to understand where the responsibility for this lies. It doesn't in fact rely with the NDI, the agency. It actually sits with the state and territory governments. So what we're seeing, we're beginning to see now, is those governments formulate plans on how it should be addressed.
Narelle Harrington is in her late 30s and has a moderate intellectual disability. She was living with her mother, Christine Harrington, in private rental accommodation, but that all changed when her mother lost her job and the two women found themselves struggling in the private rental market. Public housing seemed like the only option that would allow mother and daughter to continue living together until they were told about Kimira, a home on the New South Wales Central Coast run by non-for-profit disability provider IRT. Lifelong leases and capped rent mean adult children can stay there after their parents die using the disability support pension to pay for rent and NDIS funding for extra support.
We lead our separate lives now. We come together, either I cook at tea time or Narelle cooks, but during the day, because she has support, she's becoming much more independent in looking after her own home. And she's getting out and doing more things and being part of a group and fitting in. And that's what our little community is about. We're extending. We haven't sort of left something. We're embracing something new.
They live in one of 12 units that were set up with assistance of a government grant and are among a limited number of such models operating in Australia. IRT's CEO, Patrick Reed, says the biggest challenge is making its model a long-term solution.
I think the challenge, though, is that sustainability aspect. You know, it took a grant, some in-kind funding from ourselves as well, cash and in-kind support, to make this come to reality. So I think the model works. I think it supports people. I think it's a really good environment, but it is tough to maintain.
17,000 people with disabilities live in group homes, and around 30% of those have mild intellectual disabilities. The quality of group homes varies dramatically, with instances of neglect and poor monitoring of clients expected to be mentioned at the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability. Group homes were set up more than 50 years ago to move people with disabilities out of large institutions and into the community. Many people with milder disabilities don't need to live in them, but have no other option. Justine O'Neill is the CEO of the Council for Intellectual Disability and says for many older people with an intellectual disability, group homes can bring up dark memories from the past.
I think it's important that we are sensitive to the history that people with intellectual disability have with being institutionalised. And so many people who are ageing now with intellectual disability have had experience of being in institutions as children and not very happy experiences of being in institutions. So it's really important that we don't re-institutionalise people as they age, and we really do respect people's rights to have support to live in the community like everyone else.
Joseph Connellan says the introduction of the NDIS provides a sense of optimism that could also be applied to producing new housing options for people with disabilities.
It's a very complex but valuable opportunity that we're now trying to wade our way through. And there are no experts in this place, but it's a case of just walking beside people to try and get the best possible outcome.
The resource produced by the Melbourne Disability Institute and the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence will be released at the end of June. Peggy Giacomelos, SBS News.
If you enjoyed this, you can find more SBS features on our website or from your favourite podcaster like iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher or Wooshka.